Prepare for a true revolution.
Actually, you can prove God exists.
Questioning tradition, because what you've been taught isn't always true.
The truth will set you free.
That's right, the truth will set you free. Truth Revolution. I'm Dave, along with me is Jeff.
Good morning.
Good morning. We're from Revolution Church, and you should stop by and check us out. We'll be going here in a little bit less than an hour.
10:15 a.m., and we meet right across the street of Ace Hardware here in Salina. So, yeah, this is a local show, if you didn't know that, Salina, Kansas.
Well, if you didn't, you know it now.
You know it now, and you can check out our website, truthrevolution.tv. That's our regular show's website, truthrevolution.tv. You can check out all the information. There, we're putting up shows now,
right?
So as we go along, you'll be able to get some past shows that we've done.
It's actually starting to look like a real website.
Well, that's weird.
That's great.
I know. You know what I had someone tell me the other day?
Mm-hmm.
You guys are like a real radio show. I listen to it and you sound like a real show.
What? We need to do something about that. Anyway, today is a subject that's really near and dear to our hearts.
Science
and religion.
Because our tagline is faith.
And faith meets reason.
Faith meets reason. It's where we say religion and our brains are not contradicting each other.
Right. Like a lot of people like to make us think.
Mm-hmm.
Because science and religion, or faith and reason, mm-hmm. can coexist together.
Preach it.
I mean, you can set them in a room together and leave and come back and they'll be sharing toys.
You
know what I mean?
Well, they can, theoretically. The problem is nowadays, mm-hmm. people believe that science and Christianity conflict.
Right.
That you have to choose one or the other. So our question really is, does scientific study destroy our belief in God? Or if you want to become a Christian, do you have to leave all that science stuff you've learned gone in your backyard?
Well, and to be honest, I mean, if you look at it just at first blush with what you've learned today and what you read in the Bible, sometimes it doesn't line up unless you do some research.
Unless you engage your brain.
You need to ask questions. We encourage questions here on the show. We encourage questions at the church.
Absolutely. So, you know, I was browsing around on Facebook the other day, and I found an atheist page, and they had all these different pictures kind of making fun of Christians. So I browsed.
That's what they do, you know?
Well, honestly, some of them were pretty funny.
Okay.
But I found this quote. I thought, oh, man, this is exactly what we're talking about. So this is a fake Christian quote attributed to Christians, just to make fun of Christians.
All right.
It says, "I don't know much about science, except that it's wrong."
Well, that is a silly quote. But you know what? It's not actually beyond reach that some Christian out there might actually say that. And we're here to talk to them, too.
That's right, because we need to know, as Christians, we don't leave our brains behind on scientific matters. And anyone who's listening who's not a Christian needs to know that if you want to investigate Christianity, if you want to study and know whether there's a God or not, it doesn't mean you leave your brain at the door and walk in the front of the church.
Right. We welcome full investigation of our religion.
Right. But what we want to do is engage in a discussion that is based on reality and mutual respect.
Right.
You know,
that's important.
That's right. Atheist Chapman Cohen said, "Gods are fragile things. They may be killed by a whiff of science or a dose of common sense." And see, that's kind of the mantra or the type of dialogue that we don't want to throw at each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not true that, you know, hey, a whiff of science or maybe a little tiny bit of common sense would make you say, oh, God's not real. I mean, you know, we look at scientific claims and we judge them based on their own merits.
Right.
We don't say, well, I'm a Christian, so I don't believe in science. What we do is say, hey, look, science is trying to pursue truth.
Mm-hmm.
Science wants to know what's real. And so do we as Christians.
That's amazing.
And so when someone puts forward a scientific claim, we say, let's evaluate this based on the merits of truth or falsehood. Mm-hmm. Let's look at the evidence and see whether or not it purports to be true.
Right.
And that's what we're asking people to do with Christianity as well. Let's look at the evidence. Let's not just, you know, make fun of it. Let's not just make assumptions, but let's look at the logical evidence like we've done for a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
And based on its own merits, on the evidence provided, you have to decide whether it's true or false based on that. this also assumes you have to look up and know what the evidence is.
Right.
You can't just make assumptions. You can't just say, well, I think this about science, or I think this about Christianity.
Don't
you
have be to actually, making things up.
That's right. You have to actually listen to the other side. Mm-hmm. So, you know. Ian Barber is a guy who wrote an article about science and Christianity, and he has four different views on how they relate to each other.
Okay.
And the first one is conflict. I mean, this is
pretty, right out the gate.
Right. I mean, this is pretty common. Science and Christianity, he says, are incompatible, and they disagree on issues. They're at odds with one another, and they cannot be reconciled. You know, the author puts it this way. In a fight between a boa constrictor and a warthog, the victor, whichever it is, swallows the vanquished. In scientific materialism, science swallows religion. In biblical literalism, religion swallows science. So that's kind of the first possible viewpoint of how science and religion relate to each
other. Right. But what he says is untrue about religion. In a religious context, religion swallows science. I mean, mm-hmm. as far as, because, correct me if I'm wrong, because I often am, did not religious people basically expand science?
Yeah. Okay. We're going to get there, Dave.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. You're right there. We're going to get there. And actually, we're going to end the show today. I'll give you a little preview here. We're going to end the show today talking about the amazing scientists of history mm-hmm. who actually thought they were theologians because of what they were doing.
Right.
So, science and God have really always been very closely related. The pursuit of science, the pursuit of God. Mm-hmm. But what Ian Barber's saying here is scientific materialism and biblical literalism is what conflicts with each other. So if you're a materialist where you believe that everything is material and there's mm-hmm. no such thing as spirit, then that would conflict.
Okay.
Because you're looking at scientific answers and you're saying everything has to have a material answer. There can't be any room for God or spiritual things, or anything other than the
right what we can see, what we can touch,
right,
smell, hear, so all the five senses.
So that's the first. The second one is independent. Now we don't agree with conflict. We do that. We say materialism and Christianity conflict. Okay, mm-hmm. but the second view is independence. And he says one way to avoid conflicts between science and religion is to view the two enterprises as totally independent and autonomous. Each has its own distinctive domain and its own characteristic methods that can be justified on its own terms. Proponents of this view say that there's two jurisdictions and each party must keep off the other's turf. All right? Each must tend to its own business and not meddle in the affairs of the other. So, and this is really where a lot of Christians, I think, are today mm-hmm. and a lot of atheists are today.
Right.
They say, well, you can believe in God. That's fine. Go do your God thing. I'm going to go over here and do my science thing.
Right.
And let's just keep away from each other and we'll be fine. We're just independent. And what you learn about the nature of the universe, about when you're studying God, when you learn the nature of the universe, don't bother that when I'm talking about science.
Right.
And when I learn stuff about, whether it be evolution or whether it be how things work, I'm not going to bother you with those facts either.
Right. So we're encouraging you to mix it up.
That's what,
get
right,
together.
We're saying let's not do this independence thing.
But don't make it a turf war.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The third view is dialogue, and on many issues in this view, it's possible for science and religion to agree. They can share information. They can use each other's studies to further their own.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Christian figured out something about the nature of the universe, they could share it with scientists, and scientists could say, oh, okay, actually that fits in with my, universal theory, string theory or whatever.
String theory.
For example, some theologians have taken the accumulating evidence for the Big Bang theory as corroboration of the biblical view.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this on the show.
Right.
We even had a famous astronomer. And, we look at the Big Bang theory and we say, yeah, that fits exactly with what the Bible teaches.
It does.
And so that's the third view. Now, the fourth view is integration. And I think this is where our show gets a lot closer to.
He's getting passionate, people.
This is what we talk about. And this is the final group of people. We say there's some sort of integration possible between the mm-hmm. content of theology and the content of science. All right? There's different versions of integration, three of them, in fact, that Ian Barber puts forward. But he says, in natural theology, it's claimed that the existence of God can be inferred from the evidences of design and nature. Now, we would call this the teleological argument.
Right.
The cosmological argument.
Which we spoke of way long ago when we first... started the show.
That's right. So now, in theology of nature, the main sources of theology lie outside of science, but scientific theories may affect the reformulation of certain doctrines. particularly the doctrine of creation. For instance, you and I read the Bible, and at first glance, it looks like the Bible teaches the universe is only a few thousand years old.
Right.
Scientists have told us otherwise. So we go back to the book of Genesis and say, well, did it really tell us it was only six days old? And we look and we study it and we realize, oh, actually, it tells us. And if you want to find out what it tells us, listen to one of our old shows. But the scientists have said, hey, there's something more going on here. And so we take their advice and go back and look.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And so that's kind of integration, how science and religion, they integrate and they work with each other. You know, Christians learn something about the nature of the universe and they talk to the scientists. Scientists learn something about the nature of the universe. They talk to Christians and we go, wow, we're both pursuing truth. So we both can't be wrong. If truth is what is real, then we're both going after the same answers here.
Right.
And that's where we think science and Christianity relate to each other.
Definitely.
So, yeah, you know, this is what we're getting at today.
Mm-hmm.
Christians and science don't have to conflict. And we don't even have to be independent of one another.
Right.
As long as we're not believing in some sort of materialistic only universe or some sort of spiritualist God of the gaps only universe,
right,
we can get along with each other.
There you go.
Now, I say God of the gaps. God of the gaps is when Christians, primarily, or any person who believes in a God, comes up and they run into a problem where they don't have a scientific answer for something, mm-hmm. and they automatically say, God did it!
Right.
You know, it's like there's a gap there in knowledge, so you just kind of pop God's name in there, mm-hmm. instead of studying further.
Right.
That can happen. Christians can do that. Theists can do that. Even deists can do it. You know, where you're studying and, well, we don't really understand how the cells, you know, take in sugar and output energy. Oh, well, God did it. You know,
well, God designed it.
Yeah, we can say God designed it. It doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily mean God pushes every little detail along, though. We want to be careful not to put God in every little question right. that we have.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah.
That's excellent. So let's go ahead and take a break real quick and do a Bible contradiction.
Bible contradiction.
And from my understanding, we're going to be doing a couple of these today if we can fit them in.
Oh.
Yeah. Check it out. Does the Bible err when speaking of a solid dome above the earth? The problem here, Job speaks of God who spread out the skies like a cast metal mirror. In Job 37:18.
Okay.
Indeed, the Hebrew word firmament, which God created, in cross-referencing Genesis 1:6, is defined in the Hebrew lexicon as a solid object, but this is in clear conflict with the modern scientific understanding of space as non-solid and largely empty.
Yes, okay, good. And that question, actually, we got that directly out of Norman Geisler's book, When Critics Ask. So if you're interested in that, you can check that out. This is a good question because, hey, this is a scientific question.
It is.
Is there a solid dome above the earth? Because scientists have told us there's not a solid dome above the earth.
Right.
If there is, I don't know how those space shuttles got through.
Right. There's a little window.
Right. They opened it up. I know the combination. Just hold on. The Book of Job says there's a cast metal mirror above mm-hmm. the earth that you wouldn't be able to get through. So what's going on here? It's true that the Hebrew word rakia meant some kind of solid object, but the meaning isn't determined by the origin of the word, but by how they use the word.
Okay.
All right. The Norman Geisler here gives the word board in English as an example. Board means, a wooden plank. But if you're a member of a church board, we're not talking about wooden planks, are we?
Sometimes.
Right? The way we define a word is how it's used normally, right. Not about its etymology, not about its origin.
Okay.
And so here, when we look at this word that means cast metal mirror, we're not saying, let's talk about a perfectly hard surface around the outside of the earth.
Right.
What we're talking about is some sort of firmament, something not solid, but something that does exist above the earth. Which in this case, that would be known as an atmosphere. It's not solid, but there's some sort of surface outside the earth. And
right.
the Bible talks about this. And how could they have known that thousands of years ago?
Because
God inspired the Bible.
You think.
Yeah. So that's mistake number two, by the way. Presuming the Bible guilty until proven innocent.
We shouldn't do that.
We're going to be back right after this break. TruthRevolution.tv.
And welcome back, Truth Revolution. Dave and Jeff from Revolution Church.
Revolution Church, we're meeting here in just a little while, so 10:15 a.m., come on over. Everybody's welcome, no matter what you look like, what you smell like, what you wear.
That's true. Look at me.
Look at, I mean, just take Dave as an
example.
Yeah.
No, 1111 West South.
1111 West South Street. And if you want a map, you can go to truthrevolution.tv or our church's website, SalinaRevolution.com. Mm-hmm. SalinaRevolution.com has the information on when our church meets and all that. So.
Right. We do everything but actually just drag you in.
What does that mean? We do everything but drag you in?
We give you all... There's no excuse. We give you all the tools that you need to get there.
Oh, like maps and times.
Yeah, we're not going to just drag you right in.
I thought you meant like we're out there yelling at people, come inside! Well, we don't do that.
I do.
Okay, well, maybe Dave does, but he's not. He's really like a kitten. He's not going to hurt anybody. Mm-hmm. Okay, no, I'm just kidding. But you are all welcome, 10:15 a.m. this morning, so I hope to see you guys there.
Yeah.
Hey, science and Christianity is what we're talking about today. And we've looked at the four different models by Ian Barber. We look at a potential Bible contradiction. And what we've basically said is, although some people think science and Christianity conflict, we think that they integrate quite nicely.
They do.
Because we're both pursuing truth.
Right. As long as everybody uses their brains and plays nicely, mm-hmm. we can actually come to a good understanding.
That's right. Now, science cannot explain or prove Christianity completely. That's not going to happen. And mm-hmm. and that's fine, because science is not the appropriate way to approve or disprove Christianity.
Right.
Christianity can be proven legally / historically. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is a historical event. And science can't prove historical events.
Right.
Science can take theories and ideas about the way things work and test and repeat those and try to find truth. But you can't really test and repeat the resurrection of Jesus Christ.
Right. But let's not mistake this. Archaeology can prove that a place was here or a place was there. We're not talking about that.
Well, that's a totally different discussion, which we've done in past shows, mm-hmm. Which will hopefully be on the website soon.
Right.
But archaeology can show us what we find in the ground,
right.
and we can make assumptions based on that. But yeah, I mean, you could say that archaeology has proven that a town was here.
Right. I just didn't want them to mistake that we were saying, well, you know, archaeology can't prove anything, or because it is a science. Sure.
Yeah, a historical type of science.
Right.
But science in itself, where, you know, let's say we take something in a beaker and we improve on it, we test it, we mm-hmm. repeat that mm-hmm. experiment. This is a set of beliefs Christianity is, and it's based on the historical resurrection of Jesus Christ.
Right.
And so it's not like you can test and repeat that.
Right.
So science can help aid Christianity. Christianity can help aid science. But neither one is going to disprove the other.
Can you imagine if they actually got together? More would be accomplished, I'm sure.
Well, you know, and actually, a lot was accomplished when they both got together. Mm-hmm. Let me just talk about some scientists here really quickly.
Okay.
And we're going to I'm going to start with a modern scientist who is an atheist. And we're going to end up, by the end of the show, talking about Copernicus and some other guys like this. So Robert Jastrow is an atheist. He is an astrophysicist and was the director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies. Mm-hmm. This is a big, big scientist, right?
Right. We've talked about it before.
Yeah. He says, and he's talking about the Big Bang. He's talking about the creation of the world. And he says this. Now, remember, this is an atheist talking. He says, now we see how the astronomical evidence supports the biblical view of the origin of the world.
Oh.
The essential elements in the astronomical and biblical accounts of Genesis are the same. Consider the enormousness of the problem. Now, because for him, this is the problem.
Right.
Consider the enormousness of the problem. Science has proved that the universe exploded into being at a certain moment. It asks what cause produced this effect? Who or what put the matter and energy into the universe? And science cannot answer these questions.
Ah, that's where religion steps in.
Right. And so he's saying, look, we know the universe came into existence. Science has proven that. But we don't know why.
Right.
We don't know how. We can't. Physically can't look past the Big Bang. And so he's saying religion, these theories about God, they're providing answers that science can't answer. And that's okay, because religion, when you look at the Bible, the goal of the Bible wasn't to provide scientific answers about how the world works. It tells us that creation gives us some clues about God. For instance, Romans 1:20 says, for the since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without an excuse. What does this mean?
This sounds like a mouthful.
This means that when God created the earth, the world, that he did it in such a way that we can look around at the mm-hmm. earth and see some of God's qualities. You know, we can look at the universe and go, wow, this universe is huge. God must be huge.
Must be.
This universe is creative. Everything's so different. God mm-hmm. must be creative. We like to love. God must have love. We should be able to understand and infer things about our Creator by looking at his creation. Just like if you looked at every single painting an artist ever drew, ever painted, you might be able to infer some things about that artist.
Right, exactly.
Same thing with the universe. This is God's canvas. Psalms 19 says, "The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands." And so by looking at the skies, looking at the heavens, looking around, we can see some information about God. We can see his glory and his work. So you know, this is really kind of intriguing stuff. The Bible actually tells us, study and understand and learn about creation, because this is going to tell you something about God and about truth. I mean, the founders of modern science, like Copernicus and Kepler and Galileo and Newton, all these guys, they themselves believed the universe was the product of a mind, not random chance. Because they saw how much design was here and how it was ordered. And why is the universe ordered instead of chaotic? Why does it make sense? Because, they said, a mind created it. Johannes Kepler, this guy is best known for his laws of planetary motion. He has written, you know, the orbit of every planet is an ellipse with the sun at its focus. These are planetary motion right. laws. He's got three of these at least. And, you know, I'm not going to go over them all right now, but they're really interesting stuff if you want to get into science. But Kepler, before he became a scientist, a famous scientist that influenced all of our science even today, in the 1500s, he wanted to be a theologian. He wanted to be a pastor.
Really?
That's what he wanted to do. But unfortunately, because back then the teachers had to recommend you for one course or another, unfortunately they recommended him to be a teacher of mathematics and astronomy at age 23.
Wow.
Yeah. He wrote a book called The Mysterium Cosmographicum, basically the cosmic mystery, proclaiming that the universe and spiritual things were all connected to one another.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It makes you wonder, how did we get to this point where, you know, now all of our scientists, not all of them, but a good portion of our scientists are atheists?
Yeah, well, it comes in from philosophically the Enlightenment and then some other things, and we don't really have time to go into it today, but basically materialism. People started to believe and teach that you have to only accept material things when you're studying science.
Which is sad.
Yeah.
Got time to take a couple questions?
Yeah,
possibly?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
All right, got some questions in our email. This one comes from Mark, and he says, it's about baptism. Do baptisms count if they are given to you as a baby? For example, Catholics baptize their babies. Now, this is a little off the subject about what we're talking about, but it is a question that somebody had.
Sure. This is a good question. At our church, we don't do infant baptisms. And we're never going to say that an infant baptism was a bad thing.
Right.
If you were baptized as an infant, it could be very meaningful for you and for your family. However, if someone wants to become a member at our church, we ask that they be baptized as an adult. And the reason we do this is because when you look in the Bible, every time Jesus had someone who began to follow him after he rose from the dead, that person, as an adult, after they made a decision, was asked to be baptized. And so we don't think baptism is something that's done to every person no matter what. We think it's something that people choose to do to show that they want to be followers of Jesus Christ. And an infant doesn't have that choice.
Now, what about baby dedications? We do that.
We do baby dedications, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how we view infant baptisms, as more of dedicating the child to the Lord rather than that child declaring on their own that they want to follow Jesus. So, yeah.
All right, interesting. All right, we have another question from Teresa. And she says, and I've talked to other people about this before, are the Left Behind series on the books true about the Bible, that it will happen, or is it just an idea of what they think will happen?
The Left Behind books, in my opinion, are great stories. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't know if they're that great. But they're great stories, but they're stories.
Right.
And we shouldn't take them as theology books.
Right.
And that's all I'm going to say about that right now.
Well, I've had a lot of people actually, I've gotten into discussions about, well, you know, this is what's going to happen. I'm like, I don't really think that that's necessarily true.
Yeah, the Left Behind books are based on one type of theology. It's called dispensationalism, and it's only one type of dispensationalism.
Right.
And it's one specific view of that type of dispensationalism. And dispensationalism wasn't even a theological belief until about 150 years ago. And before 150 years ago, before then, for the last 2,000 years, there was a different view, which today we call something as partial preterism, if you want to look it up. And so if you want to know what most Christians believe throughout history, it's partial preterism until 150 years ago, all of a sudden, Dave, you got me started, man.
Until
150 years ago, this guy named John Darby came in. And
how do you really feel?
Started teaching dispensationalism. It's not that bad of a view. It was just like, this is a fairly new view, and everyone thinks it's the only view.
All right. Do we have time for one more contradiction?
All right.
Let's do it. Bible contradiction. All right. This Bible contradiction comes from Revelation 7:1.
Okay.
Does the Bible teach that the world is square?
Okay.
Here's the problem. John speaks here of four corners of the earth, which implies that the earth is square, but modern science teaches us that it's round.
Science does tell us the earth is round or spherical.
It is.
So when the scientists say the earth is wrong, they're wrong. Oh, wait a minute.
Wow.
Are they just using metaphorical everyday language? When scientists say the earth is round?
I think you just answered the Bible contradiction.
Dun, dun, dun! Okay, because one of the mistakes people make is that, mistake number 12, forgetting that the Bible uses non-technical, everyday language. And this is just a metonym or an example, an analogy. When it says the earth is square, it's just talking about different parts of the globe. When it says the four corners of the earth, it just means from every part of the earth.
Right.
When the Bible talks about the shape of the earth, it actually says, in Isaiah 40:22, the circle of the earth.
That implies roundness.
Job 26 says that God stretches out over the empty place, and he hung the earth on nothing. This is stating that the earth isn't the only thing that exists, but the earth is in the middle of nothingness, which is space. So how do they know all this stuff?
It's crazy.
Hey,
really
quick.
It's almost like they had divine knowledge.
Really quick before we go. Kepler and Newton and Galileo, these guys were theologians.
Uh-huh.
They all believed in God. They wrote, in fact, Isaac Newton wrote more about God than he did about science.
That's interesting.
Yeah. You know, people think that Christianity and science conflict, but they don't.
We've been arguing about that for a long time now.
Copernicus even dedicated his... Sometimes people say Copernicus, rocked the church when he said the stuff about the earth revolving around the sun. No. The church encouraged him to publish that information.
Right.
Got to know your facts. Church, Christianity and science go together. Check us out, truthrevolution.tv. Come to Revolution Church, 10:15 a.m.
1111 West South. We want you to have a truth revolution in your life.